Hi, this is Scott Martin, president of Divorce Direction in the Orlando, Florida area. Welcome everybody to a very special teleseminar called Special People, Special Planning. And the reasons why you need this information, why it's going to be so valuable, because it's going to be able to help you make really smart decisions for your loved ones. It's going to empower you, and it will help you provide with the kind, help you be able to provide the kind of care that you want for them. And we're going to help you make sure that their special needs are covered. You're going to learn how to minimize the risk of this not happening while tapping into the vast knowledge of our expert that we have on the line with us today, Peggy Hoyt, who's an attorney here in the Orlando area. And she's going to help us navigate through the issues as she educates you and I about special planning for those special people that are in your life. If you don't learn this information, your special needs person may not receive the kind of care that you desired for them. Your wishes aren't going to be carried out. And you may also end up spending extra time and money and a lot of frustration trying to sort through this the mess that you will create if you don't follow what we're going to be subscribing to, helping you get through all this. So we're going to also be talking about some divorce issues. Yeah, that's right, some divorce issues and how all that can tie into your planning. And again, if you fail to implement these ideas, then it could be your downfall. So we want you to implement the knowledge so that you can protect and preserve your wealth and also protect your child or your adult child, I guess we could say. Let me tell you a little bit about Peggy Hoyt. She's co-authored a book called Special People, Special Planning, Creating a Safe Legal Haven for Families with Special Needs. That address many issues, by the way, and includes how to do things in the appendix of her book. And I highly recommend you get her book because it's going to save you time. It's going to save you money. It's going to help you get the desired results that you want for your loved ones. And you're going to be able to take this information and use it immediately. Let me tell you a little bit about Peggy Hoyt. She's an attorney here in Orlando. She also has her MBA. She's the founding partner of the law offices of Hoyt and Bryan. And she is board certified in both wills, trusts, and estates, and elder law. She's also a frequent speaker and author of 8 books. Her practice is limited to estate planning and administration, elder law, animal law, which is something I didn't know about, and business and real estate law. She is very active in leadership of the Florida Bar, and Peggy is a senior manager would send out cards and enjoy spending time with her horses, dogs, and cats. Well, I guess that's why you know a little bit about animal law. Well, welcome, Peggy. Welcome to our call.
Thank you so much, Scott. I really appreciate you taking the time to have me with you today.
Well, we're glad to have you because we think this is a very, very important topic, and we know that there's a lot of people out here who hopefully you're taking notes and are going to act on this information. And I want to dive in and ask you some questions because some people probably have the same questions on their minds that I'm going to be asking you. So let's start off with this. What type of person, Peggy, requires special needs planning?
Well, the type of person that would consider doing special needs planning is someone or a family who has a member who has special needs. So whether it's a person with autism or Down syndrome or any number of developmental disabilities that might be out there, somebody who's going to need some special attention beyond the age of 18.
Would that include someone, for example, that may have Alzheimer's?
It could include somebody that has Alzheimer's. So not looking just down the line at children, but potentially looking up the line at parents as well.
Wow, and there's a lot of people who can relate to that. Well, why is it so important for families with special needs children to plan for the future?
Well, it's so important for them to plan because most kids, you know, everybody needs to plan. I guess I should start with that as a premise, is that everybody needs an estate plan because if you don't have one, then the state of Florida has one for you.
Yes, and I tell my clients that, and you won't like how it's written.
That's exactly right. And then some people, though, they figure, well, you know, if I don't get around to my planning and my kids turn 18 years old, then I don't really need to worry about it anymore. Now, I don't agree with that kind of reasoning, but that just doesn't work with special needs families, because if you've got this individual in your family who's going to be unable to take care of themselves after 18, they really need to have a plan in place that's going to address the special needs of this individual.
So when should a family begin the process of special needs planning? When do you recommend that?
Well, really as soon as they are aware that they have a special needs family member. And I realize that that's optimistic, because most families with special needs are busy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just taking care of their special needs family members. But the reality is, if we don't make time to create these plans for these individuals, then we may find that we've created a bigger mess than we ever intended to.
And that could end up being very expensive and frustrating, right?
Very expensive, very frustrating, and perhaps very, very detrimental to the individuals with special needs, especially if they're receiving governmental benefits. We don't want them to lose those benefits.
Well, in your book, in the second chapter, as a matter of fact, you talk about maximizing and protecting public and private resources. So what are the three main federal disability programs?
Well, the three programs that people ought to probably be most aware of are, of course, the Social Security program. And some people might say that Social Security could mean a couple of different things. It could mean Social Security payments from a parent who's either retired or deceased. Or it could be Supplemental Security Income, SSI, which isn't really Social Security, but it is an income program for disabled individuals. And then we've got Medicare and Medicaid. And those aren't the same thing, and sometimes people get them confused. And how you qualify for one or the other is going to vary based on the individual.
I see. And you can go into more detail in your book, of course. And then you also talk about, in Chapter 5, you're talking about trust, and in particular, special needs trust. What is a special needs trust?
Scott, a special needs trust is the type of trust that would be created or designed for the purpose of sheltering assets that belong to a disabled individual so that they could continue to receive whatever government benefits they might be entitled to. And there's a variety of different types of special needs trusts. And sometimes people get confused about this, because it depends on where the money comes from as to what type of special needs trust we would use. If the money belongs to the disabled individual, then we have to choose from a variety of trusts that are known as self-settled trusts. If the money's coming from a family member, a parent or a grandparent or some other relative, then we can use the type of special needs trust referred to as a third-party special needs trust. And within those two categories, the first party or self-settled trust versus the third party trust, we have a variety of choices as well. And those choices are going to depend on the individual circumstances of the family involved.
And so someone such as yourself, an experienced attorney who's certified in this particular field, would help with their experience figure out which type of trust would be most suitable for that person's needs.
Fair exactly.
Statement.
And I would love to say that there's a one-size-fits-all answer to this, but that never seems to be true in the estate planning, or particularly in the special needs planning area.
Well, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are wondering, do we have to have a large estate in order to create a special needs trust? You know, do I have to be very wealthy to create one of these? What's your answer to that?
You really don't have to be wealthy to create a special needs trust. You do have to care enough about your family that you want to make sure that whatever assets you do have are going to be preserved for the benefit of those people that you love. And so lots of families are faced with the situation where they've got multiple children, and one of those children is a special needs individual. So how do we leave assets for the benefit of this special needs individual while also meeting the needs of our other children as well? So a large estate, not necessary, just a family that really cares about what's going to happen to their special needs individual and other family members in the event of a an early disability of the parent or the death of the parent.
You know, sometimes you're going to have multiple family members and you have maybe one special needs person. Is there a risk to leaving assets to one of those other family members who's designated to provide for that person with a disability? Could that backfire on them?
Oh, absolutely, that could backfire. And I have a personal family situation where my uncle is developmentally disabled. He's 79 years old. And my grandfather, when he passed away, he took the advice of an attorney who was not an expert in special needs planning. And the advice that that attorney gave was to leave everything to my mother and to her sister and nothing to his son, who's the disabled individual. And the huge risk in that is that now that my mom and her sister have his so-called share of the inheritance, anything could happen. My mom could pass away, certainly, and if she were to pass away unexpectedly, what would happen to that intended inheritance for her brother? Well, probably what would happen is it would pass down to her spouse and to her children rather than to her brother.
Even though the intent was to get to this other person. You know, I see this happen quite often as a certified financial planner. And also situations where people put, they're a parent and they put their child's name on a bank account with them for convenience sake in the event of death. And what could happen is if that child is sued or whatever the case may be, gets divorced, those assets could be attached. And same thing could happen here. Is that a fair statement?
That's absolutely the truth. And that's one of the biggest risks that can take place. I never want to cast aspersions on family members, but you just can't plan for the unexpected. The thing that might happen to that other trustworthy family member, you can't predict all of those outcomes.
So the prudent thing to do is to plan and use someone like yourself who is experienced and who can guide the people, a person, through all the different options that are available out there. That just makes common sense. And next thing I want to talk about for a second is divorce with special needs people and special planning and all of that. You know, I heard a statistic, and I'm a certified divorce financial analyst, and I saw this statistic and it said that when you have a special needs situation, special needs person in a family situation, that the divorce rate is something like 80%. My best friend has a son who is autistic. He's 24 years old, a wonderful young man in a special needs home under Medicaid. My friend is divorced. He's part of that statistic. Have you seen the same kind of figures?
I've not seen that particular figure, but I'm not surprised at all, Scott. I mean, the divorce rate among families that don't have special needs children is about 50%, so I can certainly imagine that it would be much higher for families with special needs, and just the stress that sometimes can be created in a family dealing with their special needs individual 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, I can see why this statistic is so high. In case of divorce, could child support payments for a child with special needs disqualify the child from receiving government benefits?
Absolutely, they could. If the child is receiving benefits from SSI or Medicaid, and those assets are attributed to the child as part of their income or their resources, it absolutely could disqualify the child from receiving government benefits.
So it's what you don't know that can actually hurt you in this kind of planning. Is that a pretty fair statement?
Absolutely. It's absolutely what you don't know. And it's also other well-meaning individuals who give advice that they've heard or that they think is correct or maybe just not even paying attention to that little detail about the child support, not thinking that that might be something that could be a disqualifying asset for the child.
Wow, who would have ever thought? Well, what's the best way for a special needs child to receive child support, Peggy?
Well, there's a couple of different aspects to this, actually. What I like to see in a divorce settlement agreement is an agreement between the parents in advance as to how the child support's going to be handled, number one, after that special needs child turns 18, because under Florida law, there is not an automatic child support stops when the child turns 18. If we have a developmentally disabled child, child support could actually continue indefinitely. Once the child turns 18, though, the government looks at the child independently of their parents from a financial perspective. So any income that the child's receiving in the form of child support over the age of 18 could be a countable resource for that child. And if that resource is not being paid to a special needs trust, and in this case it would be a self-settled or a first-party special needs trust, then that could be disqualifying income from the parent. Or another option is we may be able to get a voluntary agreement between the parents that child support would stop at a specific age, but gifts would continue to be made on behalf of the disabled child to a third-party special needs trust, so that either way we went, we would have assets that would be exempt for government benefits qualification purposes.
And it takes an experienced attorney to figure all this out and be careful to make sure it's implemented properly. I can't tell you how many times I've seen where the attorney gave someone advice, especially in estate planning, created all the documents for an estate plan, but the people didn't fund the trust. They didn't change the names on the accounts and things like that to the name of the trust. So it's important that you implement what your attorney recommends to you. Is there a way to ensure support payments continue to be paid to the special needs child, or and it might be an adult child, even after the death of a parent paying child support?
Oh, absolutely. And this is a question that you can probably answer just as well as I can. And the answer to this question, of course, is life insurance.
Right.
Having life insurance on the life of the parent who's responsible for the payment of child support.
Yeah, and that's a good way to go, because it is the best way to go, provided that person's insurable. If they have an existing policy, they could take that existing policy and carve out a portion of the death benefit, or maybe they have to get another policy if there's not enough death benefit. Also, it's very important that you maintain control of the policy. If you're the beneficiary, you got to make sure that the person who's insured isn't being able to change the beneficiary, you know, play a little trick on you, so to speak, take your name off once a year. I've seen people try to pull that trick, and it's unethical. So, but it can happen. So be careful about all of that, or
at least be
the owner of the policy.
Yes, and thank you for bringing that up, Scott, because I actually had a case where, even though the child support was court ordered, the language of the court order was not created in a way to be protective to the child. The father was to provide a $100,000 life insurance policy, but there were no protections built into that marital settlement agreement that would allow either the mother to know whether the premium payments were being made or the beneficiary was being changed.
Right.
And unfortunately, both of those things happened. The premium payments did not get made. The beneficiary designation was changed. And the child, the special needs child, lost out on this right to a $100,000 life insurance policy.
So again, ladies and gentlemen, it's what you don't know that can upset the apple cart and cause havoc. An experienced person knows these things and can prevent you from having to go down that road. That in itself is valuable. And in this case, we're talking the tune of $100,000 in valuable information, advice. Okay, well, let's move on. What's the best way to leave information for the person's care when you're no longer able to provide for them?
Well, this is a really good question. Sometimes I like to call these babysitter instructions,
mm-hmm.
but you'll often see them referred to as special letters of instruction or a special letter of intent. And it's
right.
really the operating instructions for the special needs individual.
All and you of give guidance in your book in the back, in the appendix on how to actually write one of those.
Absolutely. I think it's so important because if I have a special needs child and something happens to me and you become the guardian of that child, I want to make sure that you know everything that you need to know to raise my child properly.
That makes sense. And having it on in a letter like that, it's vitally important. And having it where people know where to find the letter is important too, but that's a different subject.
Very, very important. And then also keeping it updated, making sure that you don't create it when the child's 5 and now the child's 15, and many, many, many things have changed over that 10-year period of time.
Absolutely. Well, Peggy, let me ask you this. What are the key issues to address for planning for the future of a special needs child?
Well, there's a lot of things to talk about. We've already touched on the subject of special needs trust, so that's very important. In a divorce situation, the child support is going to be a key issue. Other things that are going to be important is when that child turns 18, if they're not capable of making their own legal decisions moving forward, then we have to have a conversation with the family about what's called a guardianship or a guardian advocacy in Florida, depending on the child and depending on when the child became disabled. But what this does is it allows the parent to continue to make legal and financial decisions for their child beyond the age of 18. Very, very important.
Well, that brings up another question. Who should I choose as a guardian or a trustee? You mentioned that in Chapter 6 of your book. Can you elaborate on that, please?
I can. And guardians are probably one of the hardest issues. Of course, if there's two biological parents, then and one of the parents were to pass away, the other biological parent would become the natural guardian of the child. Although it's not unusual, I hear occasionally because of this high divorce statistic that moms or dads will sometimes say to me, well, I don't want my former spouse becoming the legal guardian of my child. And unfortunately, sometimes we can't prevent that, but we can certainly give the court reasons for why we might not want that person to be appointed as the guardian.
Could you give an example?
Well, let's
maybe
say
if they're an alcoholic or
a drug addict, or let's say you had a
jail.
Person who was incarcerated. Exactly.
Right. Okay, I guess those are a few good ones.
Yeah, those are quite a few good ones, and especially if there was a long, drawn-out custody battle in the first place. You wouldn't then want to have one parent pass away and then have that child just automatically go back to that other individual.
Gotcha.
That could be a very bad result for the family, although it may be one that we can't prevent. And then you just need to give really, really good reasons for why someone other than the biological parent should be appointed on behalf of the child. With regard to the trustee can be a family member, another trusted individual, can be a CPA, could be an attorney, could be a corporate fiduciary. But it's often advised that the person who's the guardian of the child not be the same person who's the trustee of the money. And
why is that?
Well, that's just going to depend on family circumstances, but it's kind of like giving the person 100% control. So not only do they control the child on a day-to-day basis, but they also control 100% of the assets. Or let's say you did have a situation where the child was going to go back to live with their biological parent. You might not want that person to be in charge of the day-to-day administration of the assets.
Wow, a lot of valuable information. And, you know, my saying is clarity equals power. You can really empower yourself by being very clear about the kind of outcome that you want to have, whether it's this kind of planning or just learning how to lose weight. But you got to have complete, crystal clear clarity of the outcome that you want to have. If you don't, you're going to end up spending a lot of time and wasting a lot of money and being totally frustrated. Please go to Peggy's website. Please write this down. It's called www.specialpeoplespecialplanning.com. I'll repeat that. www.specialpeoplespecialplanning.com to learn more information and how to get a copy of her book. Do you have it listed there? I'm not sure if I saw it there.
I do, absolutely. You can get it easily off my website. You can also get it on Amazon.com.
Okay, that'll be great. And it's a short read, it's valuable information, and then pick up the phone and give Peggy a call if you'd like, if you have any questions. Peggy, what's your phone number?
407-977-8080. And if anybody'd like to be on our mailing list, we hold complimentary workshops on special people, special planning on a quarterly basis in our office.
And is that also posted on your website from time to time?
It is on the website, specialpeoplespecialplanning.com, but also on my law firm website, Hoyt Bryan, HoytBryan.com.
Oh, that's great. And for those of you who are going through a divorce or even thinking about going through a divorce, my website is www.divorcedirection.com. That's www.divorcedirection.com. Everything is held in strictest of confidence. Feel free to go in there and look around and get in touch with us. Okay, well, that pretty much wraps things up other than my disclosure, and let me read that quickly. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. And with that, Peggy, thank you for your time. And everybody, take action. That's the only way you're going to get results.
Thank you.